This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's the 18th of September 2009 in the US, where I'm joined by Josh and Mark, the former hosts of Piercing the Darkness, an in-depth investigation of the cyber terror false flag paradigm enabled by enterprise architecture software. Josh and Mark, thank you for joining me today.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you, James.
Well, it's good to talk to you again, Mark, and it's good to talk to you for the first time, Josh. So for the listeners who are maybe tuning in for the first time, please, can you differentiate your voices, maybe introduce yourselves, and tell us which aspect of the total information awareness control grid you specialize in?
All righty, I'll let you go ahead first, Mark.
Yeah, my name is Mark. I'm also known as Anti-Illuminati, one of the moderators of the Prison Planet Forum. And a little over a year ago, I had begun taking the testimony of Indira Singh that she did publicly from 2004 and branching out from her research and into all of the things that she revealed, all the connections that she made, and realizing really how massively intricate of a spider web of treason and criminality that was involved with the PTEC software. And predominantly, I mean, all of my information is sourced and is based on PDF documents from military, government, and corporate websites. That's basically the gist of it. I don't have a bona fide educational background in the systems, hardware, software, technology aspect of it like Josh does, but basically I'm the one who has delved into really digging deep for information, going through a lot of boring things that, you know, may not seem like they have any significance on the surface, but when you really get into it and you start to see all these correlations that, you know, all these relevancies to other documents and other organizations and people, as well, you know, a lot of it tying directly, which ends up tying to the people who are talked about by other individuals investigating 9/11 from their angle, from completely different angles, such as Sibel Edmonds and things like that. And basically, I've taken all the documentation and just let people know where they can, you know, I've put links to things where people can look at this, and I've just kind of like taught myself in terms of learning what they're doing just from, you know, continuously reading everything that they're talking about and understanding the underpinnings of the global police state that they're setting up and the reasoning behind that and trying to find motives for them to actually have carried out 9/11. And, the more that you find out about this, it all, you know you're on the right track when you have disparate multiple sources of information that just keep confirming everything that you're looking into. So if, Josh, you want to take it from there, go ahead.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mark. And my name's Josh. I was, I'm known as Lord Syndicate on the Prison Planet forums. Basically, I came across Anti-Illuminati Mark via the forum itself, having actually made a comment against one of his postings against swine flu that caused attention. Basically, reason I made that comment, and the comment itself was based upon technical experience I have with IT enterprise architecture, having dealt with such things for over a decade, working for large corporations, primarily large corporations, some government, but primarily large corporations. Most people would call the military-industrial complex, Sun, IBM, Motorola, just to name a few, but right. A lot of the data and a lot of the material that Mark has presented me, basically are things that I know people who have worked with, I have dealt with, you know, who have experience with people who are within 4 or 5 degrees of separation from me. So I kind of leave it at that. And I have various sources on a lot of various places within different companies, government, etc. And I kind of leave it at that.
All right. Please go ahead.
I'm done. That's fine.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there. I just wanted to say that I think Mark made a good comment there where he called the PTEC software an intricate, massive spider web. And it's incredibly complicated to untangle that spider web. And I think you guys have both been doing an excellent job on the Prison Planet Forum. So I would once again encourage my listeners to go to the Prison Planet Forum, especially in the PhD investigative reports section, where you've just detailed such a mass of information. And as Mark mentioned, coming from PDFs from the companies and corporations that are part of this. So you guys have done so much work to sort of break all of this down that it's difficult to know even where to begin. And I certainly have some questions for you guys. But first, I'd like to open it up and let you sort of bring up whatever topic you think is most important at this particular juncture.
I actually have a little interjection, a little statement I'd like to make. It's not only just companies, governments, and corporations, but even universities and private, nonprofit research organizations that have been a part of this as well, especially in the case of OMG and George Mason University. But we'll get into that in a little. Basically.
Well, absolutely. That's an important point. I think that foundations and non-governmental organizations tend to get a free ride and a pass when people talk about corporate control and corporate power. Perhaps we do need a different terminology to talk about that.
Right. Well, that's the kind of the thing, actually, is that people need to understand that there shouldn't be a different terminology because, to quote Eisenhower here, the military-industrial complex is no longer just government. It is all of these institutions. It is these corporations, these schools, and these profit and non-profit institutions that actually are now in control, making up what is this military-industrial complex that is the ruling hierarchy that, leads to the oligarchy. But the thing about it is that's the point, is that whole philosophy and that whole ruling Bilderberg oligarchy, everything filters down, and you can really, if you've, been a part of infrastructure architecture, are an architect for this type of, government systems, and I guess you have a knack for it, you can, it's clear as day, basically. But, universities take part where one professor or a dean or department head knows what's, the purpose of said experiment, and they hand them, okay, we want you to build this program that does this. And all these people on the bottom know that are students, essentially, is that they're doing this to get a good grade. And the little worker bees at work, the same thing, they're doing this to get a dollar. So the real differentiation there is the cookie that's given to the end user, sadly. But, the cookie being either a dollar or a good grade or whatever form of payment you want to take it. So that's kind of basically what I'm trying to say, is that they use all of these tools, and all of these should not be separated because they have infected all of these parts of our society, culture, and government.
Mark, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, and actually, tying into that, I think what needs to be mentioned is Object Management Group is really one of the sinister organizations behind that, because, see, what they've been able to do with the type of programming methodology that PTEC is based on, which is called CORBA.
Yes,
it's
CORBA.
It's a way of... it's a way to take the idea of compartmentalizing your subordinates to an extreme, okay?
Bingo.
And that's how they keep, it's kind of like, to draw a parallel on something real quick, it's kind of like what Alex Jones talks about when he is referencing the NSA. Like, one of the reasons why they spy on everyone is so that they can keep an eye on anyone that may not, you know, that may not be corrupt, that's within the government, that may actually be trying to do a good job and actually catch, you know, real terrorists, which would be the false flag terror. And so they can catch them preemptively and shut down investigations, like shut down drug investigations, shut down torture, you know, shut down different things. Like case in point, directly in relevance to 9/11, that's probably the best example of this, is this guy was for real. The top counterterror officer for the FBI, John O'Neill. I mean, he had like the most intel, most information about Al Qaeda and Bin Laden, and what he was finding out was that Al Qaeda was run by the Central Intelligence Agency. John O'Neill also took a team to Yemen to investigate the USS Cole bombing, and he found ties to Israeli Mossad, that type of stuff. And what happened? Jerome Hauer of Kroll Associates gave John O'Neill a new job. They basically fired him. He had a briefcase. John O'Neill had a briefcase. They seized that. You know, they terminated his job. They seized his documents because it would have, you know, it was like stuff just like Sybil Edmonds in its own way, and it would have exposed hardcore criminality that would have, it would have really, you know, brought a lot of the cards down in the house of cards, okay? So they seized that, and then lo and behold, they gave John O'Neill a new job at the World Trade Center starting on 9/11. And he's dead. It's like, what a coincidence. So that being said, back to what I was saying, the New World Order, see, they look at, they don't play games. I mean, that's been said by a lot of people, but they really don't. They've got every single thing covered, even down to the, you know, the most minute details. And where that leads to is the software architecture. They make sure that all their little lemmings, all their little dumbed down little, you know, people in the government, like at the CIA and even at the National Reconnaissance Office, they are only, you know, that CORBA and the COBRA programming language, which Josh will explain, that is what gives them the ability to carry out false flags and to be able to hide information from people that they don't want to see it.
Well, yeah. It's part of the whole RBAC idea, which is, you know, part of general IT security principles. And, you know, just to comment on what you said, Mark, yes, they conveniently give him a job at the World Trade Center and just conveniently happen to have Indra Singh attending a meeting on the 106th floor that day, which, by the luck of God, she missed and was late to. Yes, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, too many coincidences there for that to all be coincidence. But basically, here's the point. Let's explain a couple things. For those familiar with IT or even not familiar, here's a little primer. IT security, I should say. Specifically, fine level control, NSA level security. What we are talking about here specifically, goes by very exacting names on the different distributions that are used, but all of them have been certified as quote unquote NSA trusted operating systems. I'm using this in IT as an example because it basically, although it is heavily used in IT, it translates throughout and even translates throughout it into people and into policy, okay? And the whole core of this is the idea of group policy. Now, if you're a Windows administrator, this should stick out in your head really big, but it's basically a set of rules and definitions as to what you can and can't do on a system. you as a user, administrator, super administrator, machine administrator, all of these things, of course, are determined by permissions, you know, held in the database. The database has a little field that tells, you know, whatever program, hey, you can do X, you cannot, you know, you can't do X. Why? You know, but point being is that RBAC is role-based authentication, and the idea that each one of these groups has a role in the institution. So you have entire operating systems built, entire systems, entire organizations built upon the idea that person Y only needs to know enough to function for their job. Their permissions in a computer, their permissions throughout all electronic systems and information systems and access systems should, you know, equate only to what they need to do their job. And this is, you know, kind of a simple idea. In practice, it's a lot harder in a lot of ways because it involves thousands of lines of code that are built into systems that have the ability to, you know, actually secure and, you know, allow these things to occur. But the point is that, you know, they're all based on a set of standards. Because if you don't have a set of standards, then the end user, the person, or the thing setting the permissions, you know, isn't going to have a way to translate them across the board. And this is where we get into a term called interoperability. Everything has to be able to talk both ways so that these systems can pass data freely. So that if Joe Blow jumps on this terminal and logs in as Joe Blow, then he's only going to see what Joe Blow needs to see. If Joe Blow's a nobody, he'll get told to go away if he's, you know, if it's a secure system of any kind. But say, Joe, you know, it's a library computer. Joe Blow can, and this is real, Joe Blow can log into a library computer and, you know, he'll get to browse the catalog and surf the web and that. You can go to a library computer, and if you have the login and password that you can actually put in the machine, you know, the Windows login and password, it will authenticate to systems that will allow you to access things that, you know, most people, basically core top secret systems. Granted, whenever you log out, that terminal will automatically reboot and flash itself, which is basically it'll clear its memory and wipe itself as per a DoD procedure that actually wipes that machine, you know, so that they're all net boot, which means they boot off of a network. It has no operating system until it's turned on and it pulls it over a network cable, like off of the internet, basically, except it's a LAN. So it net boots, you know, everything's wiped and goes back to the next user. But while it was under user Y's control, let's say user Y was, you know, a local university professor who has top secret clearance. Because, you know, not just anybody can walk into a library and do this, because there is compartmentalization. Let's make this clear. This is the point of RBAC and the whole point that every single person and every single object has a place in the database. Locations are reduced down to a code, a string of numbers and letters, perhaps even a binary number in the end. And the point is that each one of these becomes a unique identifier for said object, so that said object is only able to be allocated to people who need it. And this is the whole point behind role-based authentication, and the point behind this, it's a principle called fine-grained control. So if you look at it and, you know, you see this term, this is what it means. It means the ability to allocate an object specifically only to what it needs to be allocated to. And when it's no longer needing to be allocated to said to other objects, for that allocation to be able to be removed, or even the object to be removed, and have everything else function. Well, usually, but that's its own piece. Right. The point is, so you have this as a security system. And, you know, basically, it'll prevents you, General Y, who's in charge of, oh, say, parachute troopers from, you know, going and digging into submarine, you know, plans for an admiral or something. Basically, is the general premise behind it. And premise and theory, such things, you know, have their place and their uses. It's only, you know, in their implementation, really, I would say, that, you know, things really go wrong and their intentions. You know, implementation, its own story. But, and, okay.
Mark, would you like to expand on that point?
Sure.
Yeah, please. Go ahead, guys.
Okay, in reference to the interoperability, what this, another thing you have to look at with this is the idea behind this in one respect is giving the your pawns, okay, the New World Order is giving the people in their that work for them the illusion of administrative control. When so that they'll think they're they'll think that they're in charge or whatever, but really the people above them will always be in charge, or they'll be able to override the even the the quote unquote administrator, and they won't know that. What's an application of this? What am I talking about? This is what we're talking about here. This is what they're doing with the idea of the smart grid. Okay, this is how they're transforming all of the electric power plants, distribution, power distribution centers across the United States, and they're going to do this globally. When you have anything that is, and this whole agenda, what I'm talking about is kind of a, it applies to a lot of different things. It applies to cybersecurity too. So I might sound like I'm jumping between two different topics, but I'm doing it because it's easier to show the relevancy by doing that. Because this is their whole agenda. I mean, they're taking everything over. Okay.
It's all interconnected. It's all interconnected, definitely, Mark. Go ahead.
Okay. Here's another way of saying this. The guy who was the former head of cybersecurity, Rod Beckstrom, okay, in his own words, he wrote a book on this too, touting the advantages of decentralization on how a starfish represents decentralization, where if you cut off one of the legs, it regenerates. It has true resiliency, okay? And the antithesis of that is the spider. This is his book, The Starfish and the Spider, where the spider represents centralization, okay? Now, this is really key, because let me explain this. Now, Beckstrom himself was not really like an IT guy, per se. I mean,
Beckstrom,
Josh can go into that in a second, but here's the thing. The reason why Beckstrom resigned is because he saw the and if you look at this, if you look into these people, you'll see, like, why does this name keep coming up? Ask yourself this question when you read anything. Like, look for the same thing to come up all the time. Like, particularly in this case, the CSIS. You notice with the Obama administration, if you read just a bunch of articles about what's going on, you're going to see them, you're going to see the Center for Strategic and International Studies come up all the time, because that's a leg of the CFR / Bilderberg. And they're totally, you know, embedded in the government. I mean, they're openly in the government now. Okay. So you have the CSIS that is, they're the ones that originally hired Rod Beckstrom, and Beckstrom resigned because he was freaking out. And, you know, he's like saying, what the hell, you guys are trying to centralize everything. You know, this is, you know, this is a total takeover. You're removing real security here, and you're setting this up for a disaster. Okay, that's what, when you read all the stuff about that, that's why he resigned. Because he, you know, he's just like, these guys are just, they came out of the woodwork, and it's like, we're in full takeover mode. You know, if you don't like what we're doing, you know, you're fired. Get out of here. You know, that's what's happening. There's all these top people. There's a nuclear weapons naval officer that resigned. I mean, there's all these different people, a former, some national reconnaissance officer chief. There's all these different people that are leaving in key government positions because they don't want to be anywhere near the fallout when all this stuff goes down.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, precisely. As I was saying, one of my favorites was that Joint Chiefs Admiral who, you know, resigned over Iran. That's, I think, one of my favorites to date. But yeah, Beckstrom is an interesting character. He worked for a company and basically ran the whole Black Hat Convention after his partner, whose name escapes me. I believe his first name was David. But basically, the reason why his partner no longer ran it was because of all the trouble he got himself into. These guys were real old-school hackers, meaning not that they, are what the movies make them out to be. These are people who basically make things work. If they can't, you know, make it work, then figure out a way. And if they can't figure out a way, then usually it's because the product they were given was garbage. But it's its own story. and even then, that's his own story. Basically, his partner left and was forced to no longer work for the company and do consulting for one of the largest security companies in the world, especially for the U.S., because he continually revealed all of these exploits and all of these backdoors and all of these systems that companies just didn't want to be public. And it's interesting, in fact, because, you know, companies like Cisco and specifically Apple, and this is one of the biggest ones, this great one, this really what, you know, put a lot of heat and got Beckstrom his position as CEO and then later the chairperson, because they figured that, you know, he would just go along and be a lackey after they saw what Apple and the tough time Apple gave his partner, which is basically they discovered that all of Apple's Wi-Fi cards running in the Aetheris chipset and all of their laptops, which still to this day, I believe, may be an issue. Well, the latest release of the OS I have not checked, so I cannot verify, but it affected all versions of the last release until, I think it's like Snow Leopard is what's the new thing, basically. And the problem is that the Wi-Fi chipset itself, all you really need is a box the size of a, you know, remote control for your car door. And all it has to do is tell the chipset, pick me up. And it grabs this piece of code and installs it. And it becomes a bug, a Trojan that infects your entire computer and allows the attacker to do whatever they want, and even emails the attacker, or sends the attacker SMSs or that sort of thing, so that they know how to gain, you know, how to access your computer remotely. Even emails it, some of it, if you know the guy, if you want it that way. And they revealed that this was possible on all Apple chipsets. Apple placed a legal gag order on him and the company, and basically, you you know, tried to shut them down and waged a propaganda campaign against David, I believe his name, his partner's personal character, rather than even addressing the exploit. They did this for a course of 3 months. And at the end of it, finally, you know, claim they fixed the problem. And as I have said, the problem has existed, and it exists even in the iPhones. So, if you have Wi-Fi in your iPhone, and you're in a coffee shop, and somebody has one of these things, everything on your iPhone belongs to them as well. But excuse me. Getting over a little bit of a cold, but the iPhones are their own piece of work. But point being that basically they discovered this, and Apple waged a campaign against him, had him gagged for literally 12 months that he could not speak about it. When he finally was able to talk about it, he explained what the exploit was, and oddly enough, Apple claimed they fixed it, yet it was still exploitable. And Beckstrom and he both agreed that, you know, his partner should resign, and that he should take the company because of the amount of garbage that Apple was throwing at them. And at this point, he took that place and started, basically ran last year's DEF CON conference, 2008, and he also 2008 and 2007. There we go. Little iffy on the date. Well, I know Beckstrom ran 2008. I want to say it happened in 2007, but iffy on the date there. Yeah. As I sadly like to say, I tend to forget things like dates, and I've forgotten more things than some people have ever learned, sadly, and I hate to say that, but yeah. I've had people tell me that or say, it seems like, you know, I'm like, yeah, sadly. And so Beckstrom took over the company, and roughly, yeah, basically it was 2007. A year later, was elected head of cybersecurity because he was running the Black Hat conferences and the Black Hat security group, basically, which is known that because, well, Beckstrom himself was more of the PR guy, and he was more of the ethics guy. He wasn't that much of a hacker, but he was definitely an ethical guy, and that was the thing. And so, you know, that's why, you know, his partner really liked him, and basically, you know, that's why they worked together and why it worked out so well, because they were both really ethical guys, and one of them was really talented in hacking, and one of them was really talented with PR, publicity, and, you know, that sort of thing, and that PR person was Beckstrom, and hence the government saw this and thought, well, let's make him cybersecurity head. He's great with, you know, computer security PR. We've never seen a guy who can make so many people in a room take this cybersecurity stuff seriously. Oh my God, he's right. Got all these people taking this stuff, like, you know, really into it.
And right, because his position was legitimate. His enthusiasm came from a legitimate drive, like, you know, like the way that you would implement cybersecurity. He didn't have the motive of setting it up for false flags and so forth. You know,
exactly.
And I gotta mention something, this has to get on the air before, you know, I want to make sure this doesn't get forgotten here. There's a very huge piece of news that I'm going to reveal right now. And this is, I hope, all I can say is this. I hope that anybody who relays this show back to Jay Rockefeller, I hope he enjoys it, okay? I really do. 'Cause I've got a little message for Mr. Jay Rockefeller, all right?
Indeed.
Now, I'm going to read you a quote about something, all right? And just check this out. This is from an article that is pertaining to the creator of the backdoor Promise software. okay? The ability for you to log into it and retrieve any information at will. This is a quote from an article pertaining to him. It was very obscure. I had only found this after searching for like over a year. After a year of already looking into Promise, only then did I end up finding this. So here goes. Quote, "The most startling revelation in Rikana Shudo's discussion is that the Promise software wasn't, quote, bugged by any ordinary means, say by providing a secret telephone line access. Instead, it utilized a radical new technology Rikana Shudo developed that actually enabled the bugged computer to broadcast without wires or phone connections, signals which could be picked up at a remote site, say from an ELINT satellite," which is electronics intelligence, a satellite. That is, I'm going to pause for a second.
Yeah.
Satellites are like at least 180,000 feet up in the air. Okay.
Melissa, Canada.
The software modification forces the computer to produce non-sinusoidal waveforms called Walsh functions, waveforms different from radio waves or other kinds of transmission media. Quote, "All the files were read out. All of the files were broadcast constantly," Rikana Shudo said. He added that the technique has vast commercial applications and will, quote, "allow wireless computer networking with very small amounts of power over very large distances," unquote. Now, that information that I just read to you was from an article where it talks about that he did a demonstration, Michael Rikana Shudo, who's still in prison, he's still alive.
It's all based on ELF, just to say this and then you can go, it's all based on ELF, Tesla technology, micro wattage, long distance transmissions over extreme low frequency. But continue.
Okay. Michael Rikana Shudo did was on a German television show, okay? There are several, I think it was four different scientists that confirmed his findings. And so there's an actual video of this somewhere, whether, you know, back at the time when this took place, it would have been on VHS, you know, analog if it was recorded. So whether, if someone has a digital copy of it is, you know, remains to be seen. I'm trying to find out if I can get a copy of the video from the creator of the actual Promise software himself, Mr. Bill Hamilton of the NSA, software engineer. Now, incidentally, I have someone that acts as a liaison between myself and Mr. Hamilton. I forwarded him this information. The creator of the Promise software, I forwarded him what I just read to you, and he confirmed it to me. Bill Hamilton of the NSA confirmed to me that what I read to you is a fact, okay? So you know what that means? You know what that means? That means that every bank, you know, you look at the stuff that happened with BCCI. There's another quote I'll read to you later about Systematics on how they went around and they sold themselves to all these different banks and said that just hand over your control over everything to us. You know, let us install our software. It'll work wonders. We'll take care of everything. And they did this stuff in the 80s. This is how they transferred all the funds and where all your, you know, like I said before, and like it's been talked about by many different people, where all the shadow cyber, you know, the banks of covert funds and so forth. This is how all this was done, and all these different systems have this on it today, and all the, you know, okay. And what that means is this, or let's just highlight all the nuclear facilities, anything you can imagine that has a computer, the bioweapons labs, the Joint Strike Fighter. You know, where they work on that with MITRE Corporation that was on TV and they claimed that Russia hacked into it and downloaded 4 terabytes of data. Or the medical facility that they claim that somebody held for ransom for $10 million.
Well, let me... Okay, go ahead. I was going to say, yeah. You know, in order for people to understand that, because that's kind of a jump ahead, is they need to understand that the premise of how everything's built, the fact that everything's built with interoperability back doors, that the entire systems are designed so that people can get back, you can get into them.
Go ahead.
Basically, the point is that Promise itself is a way, was built as a way into everything from the back end, so that people could untraceably, you know, get into things, as Alexander Levis, who you like to quote, said, you know, basically, you know, P-Tech was built, which is the later stages of Promise, so that we would know their weaknesses, we would know what they were, we would know how to exploit them, and where they were. And, you know, this is key. It's that not only are these things here, but we know how, where, and what every single piece of this does. And it's all tied back to one central system, kind of like a marionette. It's kind of like, you know, everything is controlled by this string. This string works the arm. This string works the leg. This string taps the medical database. This string taps the banking database. This string taps the FAA. Right, all of these strings. Now, what one would begin to ask themselves is, don't they need some massive supercomputer intelligence for this, right? Well, I invite you all, go now to top500.org and look at the most powerful supercomputers there. These are grid computers, computers made up of thousands and thousands of nodes, hundreds of thousands, some of them, spread out across cities. They have the intelligences of cities. In fact, the current ones now run at about 1 trillion times the capacity needed by this computer put out many years ago called the NEC World Simulator. I cite this one because it was interesting in the fact that it was able and capable of running at minimum in its inception 3 concurrent simulations of everything, weather, cultural, you know, biological patterns of evolution of the entire planet based upon all of the history, the courses of probability, completely for, you know, X number of days, basically, you know, however many years in the future they wanted to run it. I think they had accurately, you know, the point of debuting it, saying we have like a 250-year calculation, you know, on that initially, you know, it's what they say, you know, what the program had run is the prototype and beta test that they could do initially. They had 250 years ahead and everything prior calculated perfectly and could simulate it and run 3 copies.
Let me get back to what I was saying, Josh.
Let me finish. The point is that this system of computers could run 3 copies of the entire Earth. The computers they have now are between 1 to 300,000 times more powerful. And they're all owned by the NSA, the DoD, and the Department of Energy. And I'll leave it at that. And you can continue.
Yeah, the point I was trying to make is that, okay, there's multiple facets to this, but let me just get one important thing out. What I was trying to say is that the way that they can use this, it's not a cyber issue. It's not a cyber hack or attack or whatever. They can have all these people worried about cybersecurity, and they're like, oh, you know, somebody getting, you know, which implies going over your standard wireless 802.11x, whatever, or over your Ethernet cable. No. The National Reconnaissance Office could have a satellite access a machine and they can download or delete or add any data to that machine from space. Okay? You see, you understand what the implications of that are? Now, that's not the only thing here. This is not like a one-trick pony or whatever. There's other, I'm highlighting this because nobody's talking about it. Nobody knows what I just told you. Okay? Predominantly, nobody knows what I just said. That the point of that is, too, is that it makes the whole thing about cybersecurity a fraud. Because, you know, that being the extreme end of their high technology in terms of how they can access a computer remotely. And if you think, there's other corroborating stuff that shows that this is not a joke. I found a document from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, okay, that shows Air Force planes scanning cities with some type of scanner to access their computers. There's a new bill that's being introduced into either the House or the Senate that pertains to farmers. You know what it does? You know how like they're going to have home inspections for carbon taxes? Well, guess what this bill does? It forces you that you have to have a government enterprise architecture on your computer to catalog your fruits, vegetables, and livestock. And if you don't have it, you're going to get fined to where you get put out of business or you'll go to prison. You are going to be forced to run PTEC on your machines. The Homeland Security has a thing that they're coming out with called software assurance. You know what software assurance is? It's full spectrum dominance over all software. They're going to make all open source software illegal. Anything that you want to run, like in Finland, there was an article not long ago, Linux is illegal, or they tried to make it illegal in Finland. They're going to take over everything. You're going to run their systems. You're going to allow the government to access your machine at will. If you don't do it, you're going to prison. You understand that? That's what these guys are doing, okay? That's how insane these people are. You're not supposed to have the freedom to be posting stuff on the internet and to be reading about what they're really doing. They don't want you to be doing that. Well, that's too bad. And you people better wake up about what their intentions are, because before you know it, they're going to have people coming to your house and telling you what to do. And if you don't, what in the hell are we letting this get to this point for? Okay? It's just off the charts. Now, the other thing I want to mention is in 2006, the Federal Bureau of Investigation publicly stated that they wanted to have all hardware manufacturers have a deliberate backdoor into them for the FBI and NSA to spy on the American people. You can type that into Google. You'll find that there was an article on Wired.com. This is done under the CALIA law. I'm not sure what that stands for off the top of my head.
Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act, 1994.
There you go. Okay, so there you go. And you have the, you know, that's just the thing. People need to wake up. The government's pretending they give a damn about cybersecurity. Excuse me? And you're saying that all these routers are deliberately backdoored so that, who do they think is, you know, if they're backdoored, that means they're not secure. But yet you're claiming you're about security, but everything is backdoored. And if that's not enough, you can access stuff from space, and you can attack, you can unlock. Check this out. Here's a scenario for you, right? Watch this. Let's say they use a satellite, and they go, oh, there's a level 4 bioweapons lab. Let's unlock all the doors right now with the enterprise architecture that's on here. Boom. All the doors are unlocked. All the weaponized Ebola gets out. 50,000 people die. Let's blame it on some guy who hates, was saying that Obama's not born in he's not a U.S. citizen. Let's tie it in with that. Let's say it was a 9/11 truther that did it, that somehow unlocked the bioweapons lab and killed everybody. Okay, we need the military to intervene.
Right.
Level of stuff that's happening.
Example, but yes, that's plausible and possible. That's a good demonstration of what is possible. Okay, it's possible for them to do this. Meanwhile, their goal here is the perfect false flag, the perfect patsy, meaning they want it perfect so that, you don't have any loose ends. You see, that's the problem they have always foreseen with all of these false flags, tying up loose ends.
And that's where the OODA loop comes into play.
Well, of course, but that's the whole system's based on that. The whole system's based on the OODA loop, which, you know, comes from a general, a guy named John Boyd, who worked for the, who was part of the Air Force, quite famous, quite well known. He invented, you know, basically, one could say discovered or invented, a system known as the OODA loop. And go to Wikipedia, search now. They actually have an amazing description of it. It's one of the perhaps best I've seen thus far online, which is even better for being that it's Wikipedia. I'm not a big fan of Wikipedia, mind you, but, you know, for once they're almost spot on. A few things of theirs are, but another good one, if you want to ever have fun, is Skynet and then subcategory satellites. Yeah, that's one interesting little topic right there. It really does exist. Not to the degree, but that's its own story. Like I say, go read the Wikipedia article if you really want to dig into that and scare yourself tonight. It's compartmentalized, run by MI5 via Laurel Skynet, now Telesat Canada. And that's all in Wikipedia. But the OODA loop is a process. It stands for Orient... I forget the exact acronym. But
Observe, Orient, Decide, Act.
Thank you. Excellent. Perfect. And the idea is that you take all of that which is past, all of your knowledge, and everything that you're doing, and you put it into, you know, the planning phase of your change. And the idea is that all of your personnel, as they are learning about its past history and all of its possible future, they then, you know, take all of its possible future and they give that to them as well. And, you know, that's called observe. This is the observance phase. Look at everything, past, present, future. Orient means to figure out how to take your project or what you're going to do and align it so that it is successful. Now, decide, you know, basically means to come up with your decisions based upon causality. Particularly, you really want to look at causality here. I'm going to step back and quote one of my favorite authors and kind of the philosophy that he touches upon here with, Frank Herbert, the idea behind the Mentats, and Zen Sunni philosophy, which is a 10,000-year extension of Zen into the future. Okay, yeah. So, the idea basically is that you cannot look at the answers in any situation, you can only look at the questions, because the questions will give you the capability to analyze the situation, because they are the only things that remain constant in every situation. Every situation will have a set of questions. These questions can be used to create a decision. You take these questions that everyone has, you analyze them, okay, and you come up with decisions based upon, you know, not the answers to the questions, but the solutions to your goal. Everything that you create, you see, must be in relation to your goal. And your goal is the key. This goal is your change. Everything is focused on the goal. Now, and the other key part here is that every one of these individuals are compartmentalized and even hypnotized by this process to the effect that they feel that they are merely acting to create and plan for the change, you see. They are, in fact, in reality, making the change, but in their minds, they only see that they are planning or working to test or implement systems to eventually make the change. Now, this becomes important on go-live date, which we'll discuss in a minute and give you an exactingly perfect parable here. The point is that you make these decisions based upon all of the questions that your team has that are your problems. You develop solutions for these problems, and that is when you act. And action is your go-live. And the best way to describe and sum up this whole process that even, you know, anybody should be able to understand is basically, you know, when you rig a building to bring it down for a demolition, the team goes in after the architects have been talked to, and they look at the architect drawings, and they have an architect come in, and they go to a demolitions expert, and these guys talk, and they ask questions. And they say, well, if we do it this and this and this and this way, they come up with a solution, right? And they send the team out, and the team rigs the building, right? And the team, you know, basically is making the change while they're rigging the building, because when the button's pressed, the change has already been made. Nobody's going to step back in that building while it's exploding. One should hope not, mind you. And, you know, you can't, really. So it has to be exacting and perfect. So they go in, they plan, they address all this. They put this, they evaluate, you know, what they've done. They maybe even run computer simulations, you know, test everything in virtual, maybe even run models. And then, you know, prototypes is what you could call them. And then finally, they, you know, everybody's ready to make the change. Go live date, the building's rigged. Everything's done. Everyone's out of the building. The fire department's down the street. You are sitting there, you know, and you're the manager who gets to press the button, and you have the countdown, and you press the button, and the building dissolves, and everybody realizes that they actually just made the change, and the building dissolves in front of them, you know, as many seconds as it takes to fall in free fall thanks to the vacuum of the explosives. And that is basically the OODA loop put to practice.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Mark.
And that is the one of the fundamental cornerstones on how the global elite had to come up with a new type of warfare after the Cold War to create the so-called War on Terror, which is creating terrorism. Using the OODA loop to come up with the inception of something called, well, several different things that are all interrelated very significantly, called network-centric warfare,
right.
Effects-based operations, military operations other than war, and asymmetric warfare.
All of those terms. Let's not forget, let me add to this.
Sure.
Agile methodology, which is the idea that the OODA loop is obsolete. And the OODA loop is obsolete because people are able to decipher it. Therefore, we must couple it with enterprise architecture, which allows it to scale for all situations. And this is what they have dubbed agile methodology. Anyhow, continue.
Exactly. And incidentally, it's like a... as an inside sick joke, I guess, to their own people, that's what's shown in that one video that we looked at from some defense contractor consortium or affiliate.
It was 4C4.
Where they show the tower, they show the towers coming down, and they show the word agile superimposed over that. It's like you'll never figure out what we mean by that. Ha ha. Right?
Yeah, it was for Seawood.
Right.
Warrior interoperability demonstration.
Yes.
Exactly. Actually, you know,
Well, they're basically one of their predecessors. It was actually at that point known as, I believe, C4ISR.
Yeah. Right. You know, here's the thing to kind of help people to see you know, the full scope of this. Like, what are the real world implications of like what we're talking about? Let me step back and read a quote from the report from Iron Mountain from the 1960s, which you know, back then, it was top secret and it was leaked, and it was and they tried to discredit it by saying it was satire and that it was just made up and everything else. And that, well, now that most of it's already come true. There's a short quote I want to read that's in reference to all this. You'll see where I'm going with this. It says, quote, no serious consideration has been given in any proposed conversion plan to the fundamental non-military functions of war and armaments in modern society, nor has any explicit attempt been made to devise a viable substitute for it. See, this is, keep in mind, this is like from the 60s, and this is when they were trying, this is before they had the idea of creating the Al-Qaeda boogeyman. This is before they came up with that. Even back in the report from Iron Mountain, there's the precursors to the current global warming scam are just, there's a plethora of...
Well, they have to create these global pandemics, these global wars, these global holocausts in order to allow the bankers to maintain control. And that is the key here, that all of this is dedicated to the one purpose. And it all, you know, people often ask why, and you know, or how, or for what reason. And it all comes back to this. If you look at the fact that there are these very few people who merely get off on the fact that they can literally control and do whatever they want, you know, terraform a planet, sadly at this point, be it this one. But yeah. And that's the point. And this is what makes them happy. This is the only thing that makes them happy anymore, is this extreme psychotic behavior. And that they print the money. They give the job. They are the people who snap their fingers and get whatever they want, because people are afraid to say no, because they'll end up dead in a gutter without a job, blacklisted, entirely, you know, having lost, going from, you know, a three-story house in the suburbs with four kids, a dog and two cats, to living in a gutter and everything is dead.
Or if you're...
They do this to people. And that's why so many people are willing to fall in line and do what they say. And that's why so many people are willing to, you know, break. When you have the ability to not only offer rewards, but to offer extreme forms of torture and pain that go beyond, you'd be surprised how many people would break. And it's very sad. And I'll let you can go from here, Mark.
Right, or, you know, again, I urge everybody to look into this individual. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, when people are looking into the global crime syndicate, you know, people today, more than ever, because of everything that's happening, there's a massive wake-up. It's about time. I mean, it should have been going on a long time ago, but... People are thirsting for real information. If you want some real information, you can look into Michael Reconosciuto. And one of the reasons why he's so significant is because he, even before William Cooper, okay, in a scanned official document that has an accompanying scanned U.S. certified mail postage sticker, okay, there's a document that he had his attorney submit to the federal government. I don't know if it was the FBI and some other, maybe it was Congress as well. He warned, he had actual intel of the base. He warned that, quote, the base is going to carry out a large scale attack in the United States. Talking about, you know, who, you know, quote unquote Al Qaeda, but he knew who Al Qaeda was. He warned about a terror attack. He warned about 9/11. You know when he warned about it? In February of uh, yeah, it's like February, I can't remember the exact day it was. Yeah, February 5th of 2001. So it's about 8 months before 9/11, he warned about it, and he was, they basically ignored him, and then after the attacks happened, the FBI had the, get this, Michael Reconosciuto was a scientist for the Central Intelligence Agency. The FBI had the audacity to call him, this is before the age of the internet, basically, well, I think this was,
this was in the
80s, they called him a conspiracy theorist. Before, you know, when I say before the age of the internet, I was thinking after 9/11, it's not before the age of the internet. But
no.
Anyways, they had the audacity to say that he was a conspiracy theorist, okay? I mean, that just goes to show you how ridiculous they are. So you have that, and there's a website with all his documents. It's michaelreconosciuto.com. You can read all about that stuff, all the stuff about Tim Osmond and, you know, the Bin Laden CIA name, where they met at the Cabazon Indian Range and all that stuff, and all the bioweapons engineering and everything.
A nice corroboration of all of that, and a nice corroboration of who Tim Osmond was. Of interesting note is Bob Fair. His book, Syriana, and other books of his actually talk about his dealings with Tim Osman, Osama bin Laden, throughout the years. He himself has positively identified Osama bin Laden as Tim Osman and as being a CIA operative. And if you look at the movie, the guy who tortures, the bald guy who tortures, Bob in the movie, that's supposed to actually be Osama if you read the book. And I leave it at that. So that corroborates all of that. If you go by Bob Baer, who was a CIA section chief, if you believe him, and a lot of people should, because he is and he knows what he's talking about. I leave it at that.
Right. You know, actually, since I want to make sure I mention this, this is just being 1 week after 9/11, I was brought to my attention something very interesting that I was actually surprised to see still up on the internet and of all places on YouTube. Apparently in 2002, and Josh can comment on this because he saw the video because I sent it to him, Dan Rather did a report on PTEC featuring Indira Singh and the CEO of PTEC, Usama Ziadi, as well as James Rado.
Absolutely. In fact, we have that in an article that we put up about Jonathan Olenoff from coreofcorruption.com, who released a news archive of 150-plus videos dating back to the 1970s, okay, including that particular video, which was a CBS report from 2002 with Dan Rather reporting on PTEC. But that was based on Joe Bergantino's reporting for WBZ-TV out in Boston. And Joe Bergantino was working directly with Indira Singh on that reporting. And Dan Rather picked up on it on the national news later on when they did the raid of PTEC. But it turns out, of course, that on the day they raided PTEC, they declared that the source code was completely safe.
Right, of course they did, yeah. Oh, jeez. Yeah.
But then it comes out that, in fact, that PTEC had been informed beforehand about the raid, so you can take it for what it's worth, which is absolutely nothing.
Exactly. It was all wiped. And therefore, yeah, of course it was completely safe, because all they picked up were a bunch of completely blank hard drives. Yeah. Right.
You know, one thing that's very interesting, and I'm not the one to have made this observation initially. Through a lot of different areas of research into 9/11, you will see various segments of that are heavily infiltrated or attacked or made issues by COINTELPRO. When's the last time you've seen any COINTELPRO about PTEC? I've never seen any. Isn't that interesting? They don't want to touch that one. Not even the people at Omnicom, Rendon, and Lincoln Group and all the little PSYOPs. They don't talk about PTEC, do they? I wonder why. Isn't that interesting?
Really?
Maybe because it's so hardcore that if you even, it's kind of like Charlie Sheen with his letter, 20 Minutes to the President. where they're not bringing that up on the mainstream media, because if they even do that, people can then just look into it and it will immediately expose that they're total liars. It won't, you know, there's certain things that you just cannot really effectively create disinformation about because it's too fragile. It's not, you know, it doesn't have enough characteristics to it that enable them to run a good psyop on it. So they just ignore it. It's just a basic, you know, thing that anyone should. It's kind of basically common sense. Some of the most important information is the information that is not being told to you on the television.
Well, that's a key point, and I'm sure that you saw how Michael Chertoff on C-SPAN was directly questioned about the six 9/11 commissioners who themselves called the 9/11 Commission a fraud and a cover-up. And he not only failed to answer that question, but then immediately tried to tie that into Holocaust denial and questions about Obama's birth location, as if they're somehow related to the topic, because they cannot address topics like that. So you point out that with Charlie Sheen, for example, they simply ignore the issue. With John O'Neill, he was attending a high-level counterterrorism conference, and he had his briefcase stolen from the conference. They blamed it on him, and they trumped up those charges to get him out of his position at the FBI. He ends up getting the job with Kroll and Jerome Hauer and dying on 9/11. You have Indira Singh, who effectively gets railroaded and gets some of the information out, but is now basically in fear for her life. You have people like Rukana Shudo, who's put in jail with trumped-up charges. You have Rod Beckstrom, who ends up getting to the point where he has to resign his position because he won't go along with it. Time and time and time again, we do have whistleblowers on the inside who are trying to get this information out, but they're prevented from doing so, which is why it's important for people who are listening to this broadcast to realize that it's the people on the outside who are piecing this information together that are the ones that are going to be able to make the difference in the system, because the insiders will always be either set up or put in jail or killed, whereas the people who are working on the outside of the system actually have a chance of cracking this system.
Oh, man. Thank you. Yes, totally. I totally agree. Thank you, James. That was wonderful. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. because it's, you know, you, the people that will make the difference. That's the thing. All of the stuff that, you know, I could, that was one of the great things that, you know, meeting Mark, did for me, is basically I can say a lot of things about certain things, but I can only comment on things as far as he has documentation for. I can't comment on things that are confidential because I like my family. I'm sorry, you know, but I pick my battles. And, you know, I kind of leave it at that. You know, that's the thing. You pick, you know, realize that, you know, there are a lot of us who are whistleblowers. There are a lot of us who try and get information out. And if we were compromised, yeah, we could blow it all out there and blow all this out there and, you know, the sad thing is parts of it would easily be discredited because you have a system that has plausible deniability, and, you know, and everybody knows that, you know, shredders and digital shredders do wonders to erase data in the right hands and the right minds. Granted, there are other techniques, but that's its own story. But the point is that basically we risk our lives to get what we can out there. If we were to put it all out there initially and get ourselves killed, then you wouldn't have this information anymore.
Oh, 40 minutes left.
Sorry. Yeah. I was just merely going to say, you know, it's kind of like the golden goose idea, just that, you know, it would be, you know, it's more effective for us, the patriots, who are able to do what we can in our spots. And anybody can do what they can in their own spot, and to know what they are capable of, and that is key. And yeah, and that all of us, if we work together, we'll be able to take them out. We'll be able to actually do something, because if we're actually working for our own goals that they cannot, you know, fathom and cannot predict,
the outcome for, then we win. The key to beating an OODA loop is knowing that you're being forced into their OODA loop, and then coming up with a system to counteract it that they cannot observe. And that is the key. And once you do that, it's broken. You've broken the cycle, and they can no longer observe you, and therefore they can no longer orient or make proper decisions, and therefore their actions will always be skewed. And this is actually the secret, and I haven't ever actually revealed this on air before, but this is the key secret to breaking a OODA loop, that once you realize that the only way that they can stop you is to observe your actions, if you stop allowing them to observe you, then they have no data, and they lose.
And not to cut you off, but that is exactly why they want full, you know, what their full-blown situational, quote-unquote, situational awareness. That's why they want cameras everywhere. That's why they want, that's the purpose of all their surveillance, is because they want to make sure they have data to use against you all the time, 24 hours a day. That's the secret behind the police state right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is the key. That's why they built centralized databases. That's why they expanded Tide to, you know, multiple locations across the country and gave it, you know, 250,000 nodes per location. That was interesting. Yes. You know, massive supercomputers based upon, you know, the world's fastest sun processors at the time. I leave it at that. And even that's bordering on things that I shouldn't have said. But yes, basically, you know, all of this is processed by massive computer grids that monitor everything you do. There's a great site out there that's called cryptome.org. The owner of this site has been battling the federal government for many, many years, well over a decade now. His site focuses upon Tempest, T-E-L-T-M-P-S-T. All of those are acronyms. Now, perhaps, James, you can help me with that. I want to
I'm unfamiliar with that one, sorry.
Not familiar with Tempest. Okay. It's basically... go online, but I'm talking on my modem at the moment. So, Blackberries. Anyway. basically, Tempest has to do with electronic emissions. It's telecommunications emissions. It's the idea that, you know, and it's been proven, it's all based upon sound physics as well as Tesla physics. Even, you know, things that are common electronic, you know, engineering, physics, you know, physical principles today. Everything has its harmonics. Everything, therefore, is able to actually be monitored in such a way. And the FCC has literally published two sets of regulations. These regulations are put out by NIST, which is, you know, now being put out essentially by DISA. for those unfamiliar, it's, I believe, DISA.mil. DISA.mil. The acronym should be explained there. Leave it at they're basically responsible for, you know, security policy for everything.
Defense Information Systems Agency.
Fairly, Cal.
And if we'll interject real quick, Tempest is Transient Electromagnetic Pulse Emanation Standard.
Thank you.
Well, actually, there. Wikipedia is telling me that it isn't an acronym, but several acronyms have been suggested, including telecommunications, electronics material protected from emanating spurious transmissions, transmitted electromagnetic pulse energy standards and testing, telecommunications, electromagnetic protection equipment standards and techniques, but I think people get the idea.
Yeah,
And it actually is an acronym. It is an FCC internal policy.
They don't even want to admit it's an acronym.
It is an acronym. It does exist. It is part of NIST statements. It's also part of Air Force Intelligence Field Manuals and part of DISA, DISA actually white papers, basically. And it refers to exactly what actually Mark quoted, and in the private sector, in the military sector, it refers to the securing of these and the procedures that must be undergone in order to protect all systems from Tempest emanations and Tempest spying. In the civilian sector, there's a little tag on every piece of electronic that you have if you live in the United States. And oddly enough, if you live in Canada, there's one that is oddly enough contradictory. And really oddly enough, the policies are. Which is interesting because in Canada, and this is interesting not to go off on too much of a tangent, I want to sum this quickly, Canada has the opposite public sector rule as we do. In fact, their public sector rule matches their military rule, which matches our military rule, that all devices should be secured and no one should be able to monitor them. However, if you notice, the FCC regulation, which wasn't decided upon by any Congress or of any sorts, which means that it really shouldn't be a law, even though it's enforced like one. But, we all know the FCC is its own beast, and they get, preferential treatment to do anything they want. I mean, nobody says that they own the bandwidth or the airwaves. Congress never voted on this specifically. Granted, it's open to interpretation, but there are a lot of things that they do broadly without approval from Congress that definitely fall outside of that realm. This is definitely one of them. The right to basically say that all devices must accept and emit radiation. They may not emit harmful radiation, and they may not emit radiation that cancels out radiation, sources that they would emit naturally. So basically what this means in common language, and it's worded in such scientific language, so the average guy is going, what the heck does that mean? He's scratching his head going, I feel like a caveman. Basically it boils down to your device must emit emanations that are readable by a Tempest black box. Tempest black box is a box built, to basically scan for various frequencies. You can build one with equipment from a hardware store and a bunch of tubes if you can, from online catalogs, you can order the transistors. Yes, I highly recommend the tubes because you're going to build yourself an oscilloscope, and the tubes will not have the gates that are built into the actual microchips. Microchips have frequency gates, and if you actually care enough and know enough about this, you realize that, the bandwidth rating on a chip is usually a lot more limited than the bandwidth you will find on a tube. Now, basically, that said, I actually have friends who work for private sector companies who have run Tempest trucks for the military in Germany. Yes, they do this overseas, where they run through neighborhoods, they watch what you're watching on TV, they watch you through your TV. Because by the very design of the TV, it's actually two-way, just like the lens of your eye. If you were to step inside your eye for a moment and take a look at the lens, you would, of course, have a picture of everything outside of it. If you look at the front of your eye, you see all of the room reflecting on the front of your eye. It's that mirror thing that happens with various light differentials. That said, this piece of information, the only thing that was ever really required for this image to go back to somebody or be able to be seen. The only problem they've ever had with getting this image off of the back of the tube remotely is that you have to have the frequency of the broadcast on the tube. The electron guns have to run the picture at exactly X number of frames per second. Now, well, since they all run at about 50 to 70 hertz, that's pretty easy. And so you tune your device to carry it to pick up sympathetic harmonics on these frequencies, and you literally can tune into every TV in the neighborhood. In fact, in Los Angeles, back in the 90s, there were a number of crack dealers and gang mobster kingpins who were going down, and they actually, you know, some of them actually got, you know, televised on local public access channels that put out court cases, in which the mobsters were like, how the hell did you get that footage of, you know, deleting expletives from, and summarizing here, mind you, but, you know, and, you know, they're like, well, that's, you know, your house was bugged. We had surveillance warrants, see? And they're like, but we checked the place for bugs. There were no bugs, basically. And they said this, you know, they had professional people go in there, you know, with counterintelligence that scanned for these bugs. And, you know, it's pretty easy. And it all boils down to Tempest. And as I've said, I have friends who work for companies who do this. You can spy on somebody through their television. You can hear them through their radio. you don't need to have a camera. You don't need to have a microphone. It's all there if you want. As I said at the very beginning of this whole piece, if you really want to really understand this, go to cryptome.org and read everything he has on that site, because he does the most excellent job of explaining it all. If you cannot find his site, Google or search for Tempest Timeline, and he lays it out over a timeline as from its creation and inception of the concept all the way to current.
All right, Mark, do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, kind of a not specifically what he's saying necessarily, but just on the broader something in reference to the broader scope of the entire show thus far. There's a slideshow from a some people that were collaborating together that work for, or they do research for Homeland Security, basically. This particular slide, it's just a diagram of the all the surveillance, different types of surveillance implementations that they had. You know, this is from 2002 of all things. This is so Orwellian that you would think it was like newer or something. It's just so off the charts. I'm going to actually just give you a tiny.
No one would actually suspect that. Okay, a lot of the technology behind all of this comes from Tesla and is over 100 years old, and no one would really suspect that because it's been so suppressed in the common market.
Let me just give you this. Let me give you this link. It's just go to tinyurl.com and then /, and then the following code: L as in Larry, B as in baseball, E as in Edward, M as in Monday, T as in Tuesday, E as in Edward. Okay, that is by a guy named Todd S. Levitt. Okay, this is the whole document is basically a document about what we've been talking about, situational awareness. They're trying, you know, the New World Order, talking about their need to spy on everybody so that they can you exploit that information against the public, and, you know, to basically just have control over everyone and to be able to do whatever they want. Now, the important thing is about that guy was working with Dr. Levis, and there's actually videos. The site that you're going to go to, there's actually videos where Dr. Levis actually introduces him. Now, to shift over to something else, I want to just kind of, I think we need to stay focused here on the cyber threat thing that they're, you know, the false flag agenda that they have. And I'm going to actually read an article.
Please.
That is pretty
before
damning.
You do, just comment as to why Tempest actually makes a big difference here. The point behind bringing up Tempest is, the point is that they can remotely, that it has been honed over the course of over 100 years from the inception of technology and communications. They have had counter communications and the ability to try and intercept said communications. It's just the idea of, you know, spy versus spy. And the idea is basically you can monitor, but at this point it's not only the monitoring. It's gotten to the point that it's not only monitoring and even remote monitoring, but it's also remote control by the enemy. And trying to, and they, it gets into the Air Force, the entire hack back scenario, where millions of times per day, they have hundreds to thousands of soldiers sitting in front of terminals, trying to hack every system in the world. And those that try to hack them back, they hack into and exploit and are given orders that any system that tries to hack you back or attack you back or defend itself is the enemy. And you are allowed to do whatever is necessary in order to neutralize it, including destroying the system and wiping all of its data, no matter who it belongs to. And they do this daily, every day.
Right, and even more insane than that, let me go into something else before you comment, so I get this out there, okay?
No.
But you're well familiar with this, Josh, because you...
Sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
Yeah, because we had covered this before regarding the National Academies with their, you know, all their criminals meeting together in a little conference talking about the kinetic... using kinetic responses to cyber attacks and even nuclear. The gist of what, one of the things they were saying is that this can be summed up as like, well, the New World Order needs the massive, you know, the 9/11 2.0 because too many people are waking up and they're freaking out, you know, rightfully, I mean, you know, from their point of view. And we need to stop them. So let's just set off nukes. Let's just, you know, what they're basically saying is that they can say, well, if China or North Korea, which that was already debunked, that particular thing there that just happened a couple months ago, or anyone, Russia, they can say that if somebody attacks, U.S. government interests, you know, through a cyber attack, that we can just by default, we can just respond with a nuke. If Russia hacks into some computers at the Pentagon, oh, let's launch a nuke and take out Moscow. I mean, this is what they have actually talked about. People from MITRE Corporation were there. Big surprise. You know, the same thing, you know, some of the same.
We're classifying the internet, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, the insanity of it is that they have actually, and one of the people, this is so disgusting, where they come off with this mentality like this, is Vice Admiral Nancy Brown, Director, C4I Systems, Joint Staff, is like all enthusiastic about, oh, it's so great, the internet has been declared war fighting domain. It's so great, we can fight on the internet. Who the hell are you fighting? There's no enemies to fight there. You're fighting, this is the other thing too. Booz Allen Hamilton and Science Applications International Corporation and other companies like that, they and the NRO and so forth, they run, like what Josh, this correlates directly with what Josh was saying. What he's talking about is red and blue teams, folks. This is exactly what the type of stuff that you saw at the Potomac with the boat that they said, oh, it was misreported that it was firing while Obama was walking by. Those are red and blue team drills being run under Northern Command. I mean, that's what that is. And that's what 9/11 was a bunch of different, you know, you had red and blue teams, and there's other teams too. There's yellow, you know, whatever, however they want to designate the color. Like at the Potomac, there was a green team, which was representative of the general public and like their reactions and so forth. And,
well, that's a site situational specific team. It's, you know, you'll have, okay, per the documents, okay. And I mean the documents that you, Mark, Cal, and Earth that are strewn across the PhD section of the Prison Player Forum. basically, they have primary teams and situational teams. And primary teams are the primary controlling factions, and situational teams can be assigned designations of compartmentalization for said situation as to better effectively manage them.
Exactly.
Yes. And I'll let you continue from there.
All right. This other tiny URL code is to a YouTube video, and it's in reference to a news article, and it's very significant. It's tinyurl.com/M, as in Monday, J, as in Jerry, R, as in red, M as in Monday, H, as in holiday, and the number 4. Okay? That is a video by an FBI agent. I'm going to read you this article. It is called, now get this, you cannot make this up, okay? This is from 2006, and the title of this is The FBI Hopes for a Digital Enron That Will Boost Cybercrime Awareness. Quote, though the FBI is gradually making progress in prosecuting online criminals, the agency is still waiting for a major newsworthy case like the Enron scandal to bring cybercrime to the forefront of public attention. Only after such an event could the necessary reforms be made to allow authorities to effectively battle online criminals, FBI Special Agent Shauna Boswell Crowe said. Fighting cybercrime requires, listen to this, fighting cybercrime requires an Enron-like scandal to force the hand of legislators, the FBI argued Friday. Only after such an event could the necessary reformers... okay, I read that part. She says, quote, my theory is that computer crime is kind of like white-collar crime before Enron, unquote. Boswell Crowe said during a presentation at the McAfee Advert Labs Day in Mountain View, California, a large event needed. Quote, white-collar crime used to be the bank, parentheses, employee, sifting some money off, or some corporate guy who was going to get rich anyway, Boswell Crowe went on. I do not think that cybercrime has had its day. There has not been something that's large enough to generate large-scale awareness. Awareness is increasing, but we have not had that large event that makes people think, quote, this is really bad. Poor FBI. You mean there's not a natural thing that would just naturally occur that would cause this? So what, that's just like PNAC. That's just like Operation Northwood.
For 10 seconds, I only have 10 seconds to say yes. And I said only because, yeah, most people don't realize that on 9/11, billions of dollars changed hands due to electronic, you know, transactions that occurred. They were all forged. They all appeared in secure systems that had remote anonymizing access. You know, you're supposed to be able to track who buys X share of something. Why couldn't they track them that day? And they were anonymized. And even to the dismay of those who committed the attacks, hard drives were pulled from the Pentagon and from the SEC offices in Building 7. And there is a great article in Wired that showed that they managed to recover data. And even though they recovered data, they were still unable to properly identify who placed those put options that day. I'll leave it at that. That's huge. If you realize what it takes to infect the Dow Jones Industrials to such a degree as to backdoor it, then, you know, you might believe that Kevin Mitnick was the world's greatest hacker, but He did have something, but that's kind of, yes, its own topic I might talk about in a minute or two. I'll let you continue, Mark.
Right, and another thing to point out is very significant. A lot of people don't know this either, and this is really a hidden piece of information. The U.S. CERT, okay, which is the Computer Emergency Response Team, who, by the way, the director, I believe her name, this was in one of the threads I put up, I think her name was Michelle Kwan, she resigned. So here you have, cybersecurity head resigned. You have the NRO chief resign and some other individuals. And then you have the director of the U.S. Computer Emergency Response Team resigned, like, not too long ago. Check this out. Actually, at uscerts.gov, they have a little box here. You know, these are all the different critical threats that they're alerting about. This goes back several years, okay? This goes back, well, this is from 2004. It says, Diebold Gem Central Tabulator, okay? A vulnerability exists due to an undocumented backdoor account which could allow a local or remote authenticated malicious user to modify votes. No workaround or patch available at time of publishing. We are not aware of any exploits for this vulnerability. Gem Central Tabulator Vote Database Vote Modification. And they categorize it as a medium risk, right? So, I mean, the thing is about this is that I believe it was Michael Corbin's interview with Indira Singh where, and I have not been able to find the documentation on this, but
right.
Anyway, Indira Singh actually said that at one point, U.S. CERT also publicly acknowledged, I can't remember if it was in specific reference to Promise or PTEC, one or the other, that they said that was a threat to national security. The U.S. CERT actually said that.
It's PTEC. Okay?
Where did that news go?
He got shoved under the rug. Shoved under the rug like the raid on the, you know, possible, you know, cybersecurity chief's house where they framed his assistant for possible embezzlement. Yeah, I know you remember that. That was a great set of posts on the prison platform. But yes, exactly. You know, and it goes back to Promise. Now, what is Promise? And, you know, I mentioned a guy named Kevin Mitnick, who, if you're a movie buff or a computer cyber buff, you might have seen Hackers too. It's about a man named Kevin Mitnick, who in reality was a very arrogant, loud-mouthed person. Being very nice there and calling him even a person because friends of mine who knew him very well personally. The interesting thing about this individual is that he happened across friends who were able to hack their way into a university system. And they got a hold of, you know, this one guy who worked for the university and worked for Sun and Nokia and basically got a hold of a piece of code that he had written for Promise that would allow law enforcement to, you know, basically listen and scan cell signals. You know, so like, you know, when the days of analog phones finally, you know, got revealed that if you had a scanner and a crystal modulator that could modulate the crystal frequency, you too could listen to anyone's conversation. All you need is the code to give the crystal the right frequency, which they called, you know, the Nokia code, the N code. yeah. Excuse me. In the movie, they call it the Nokia tel code. So he discovers this, and in the process of having obtained access and his friend actually having pulled everything off the guy's hard drive and using his very elite hacker skills to wipe his presence from being there, and I don't really want to get into how that was done, but, you know, Mr. Mitnick took credit for this, and so he got a name, and he ended up having to be on the run because he liked to talk about, you know, things that he said he did. And these things were things that lots of his friends did, but he really wanted to take credit for them. Some people, you know, they like to be in the limelight. Apparently, he is very much one of these people. He now works for a government security agency. Yeah, does whatever they tell him to, but that's its own story. As per the movie, sort of, he was, you know, on a national manhunt, having people help him out, and at the time they figured out that the only way for him to figure out what he'd really gotten, because he ended up finding a piece of software that they couldn't get into, was some crazy encryption that was beyond government. And what he'd found was the core of promise. What he had found was its very source code in a zip file by one of its many original authors. And so, you know, he set about trying to crack it. He actually managed to acquire the authorization that granted him access to an Origin series supercomputer on NC Ren. NC Ren is the North Carolina Research and Educational Network. It is the prototype for the National Grid. It is the prototype for the GIG. It is basically, yes, a giant network that allows, you know, all of these massive supercomputers to talk to each other. And this thing was created back in the 90s. Being from North Carolina and having some friends who built some things, I've had some access to a pretty interesting system. It still is the cutting edge. I kind of leave it at that. But basically, to make this short, the thing about it was he used this system to try and crack the encryption on this, which he couldn't. He used an entire state's worth of resources of computers for a total of something like over a week to try and crack his program. And then he wasn't able to do it, but they used his attempt to crack it to report trace him. And they, of course, busted him. And according to the movie, maybe his attempt got out there. Maybe it didn't. It's unlikely that it ever did. In reality, he failed miserably and was busted by a bunch of police officers and FBI and FBI, who threw him in federal prison for a number of years before he got out to go work for the government. But what he had in his possession and was known to have in his possession was the very source code behind Promise. And the movie gets into it and talks about it. They say that the guy developed it all by himself, just for, you know, craps and giggles. When in reality, it was developed for a very, you know, concerted government project. And it was the system that allowed you to get into any system. It wasn't a virus, as he said. You know, it was the backdoor to everything. And the reason this works is because everything was built in mind to have a skeleton key. Back in the old days, they'd build a castle, and they put locks in these things when they had lock technology. So every door would open, you know, with a specific key. But there was always a skeleton key that would unlock every door. And this is the way that they did such things and carried it over into computers. And that is what Promise is. It is the skeleton key to all machines.
All right. I want to interject some. Well, I'll just talk, and we're almost out of time, anyways. But I think it's. I'm actually going to follow this up to find out specific, like, firsthand info. I have a whole bunch of questions, by the way, that are being forwarded directly to Michael Reconosciuto from me. That Mr. Hamilton is going to submit to him. I want to find out things that that there's no information on. I want to, one of the things that I'll mention is very interesting. Is in a sworn affidavit to before a jury, Michael Reconosciuto testified 20 years ago that he created threat emitter technology to be able to create to inject false radar images onto radar scopes to make for the way it was worded was that it could make a jetliner appear to be a bird, to have the radar signature of a bird, or vice versa. Now that is very interesting that you have that when 9/11 was part of 9/11 being executed was false radar injects. I'm wondering is his development of threat emitter technology was that something integrated into Promise that PTEC had handed down to it? Is that how that occurred? I mean, that's kind of an interesting point right there. And I'm going to find out.
Right.
It's just it's just when you can actually pin down things and find out absolute facts on a lot of this stuff, it proves their guilt even more. I mean, one of the important things I was going to mention this earlier.
Sorry.
Is that when you look at, and this is why they want to kill the internet, folks. This is the reason why the New World Order wants to kill the internet is because it allows, because when people more and more are becoming completely immune to lies and disinfo and pertaining to just all the stuff that's happening. A lot of people are just, they're getting so astute that they're immune to that. And the collaboration and the information that's available on the internet is so incredible that it's basically giving the people the collective power of the New World Order's intelligence for the civilians, for the people who are interested in their inalienable rights and peace and not murdering people and raping kids and stuff like that and poisoning everyone's water and everything. But they're using the internet as a true investigative tool, just like a skilled forensic examiner or a homicide investigator. You collate all these pieces of data, and the criminals are getting so exposed. There's an interesting little point regarding 9/11 about something called the National Military Command Center. I just recently found this out. Right, the National Military Command Center plays a role as a go-between between the Federal Aviation Administration and NORAD for a communications link. That comm link was dropped.
Yeah.
It was dropped. You know what's interesting? You know who designed the National Military Command Center for the Pentagon? Dr. Alexander H. Levis did, the same guy that worked on PTEC. There's a document.
A commission from EDS and, yes. Yeah. Getting back for just a moment. Yeah, exactly. Wow, so many things I could say there. Wow, if only I had so much more time. Exactly. Alexander Levis, and he designed the entire system, OMG, which was basically written with his stamp of approval under the consignment of the federal government, the Department of Defense, by proxy of a company called EDS. EDS started out as Ross Perot's company and was acquired by Dick Cheney and became a very wonderful front company for the government to basically insert itself into every form of information technology. They hold the bid process rights, essentially, to all government contracts that are technology related. So if you're Northrop Grumman or Raytheon, then you are going through EDS to get your contract 90% of the time. And EDS is also giving me personnel because they're the people who supply personnel from companies like IBM, Sun, and many others. And they are essentially the eternal middlemen. You see, they are the management company. They are the company that is kind of like the know-it-all. They are the overseers. They have been appointed such because they are compartmentalized enough and they're trusted enough because they have been built specifically to manage said assets directly for the company owner. Well, owner originally in the case of Ross Perot, owners in the case of now, which is why whenever, you know, Ross Perot died, and even when Ross Perot was becoming senile, they were able to take over and gain control of his corporation and did such because they realized this man had built this massive network of corporate consulting services. Basically, they had their hands in almost all of the major blue chip IT stocks and all of these big companies back in the day, and they offered consulting services. They would get some of the best consultants and bring them in, and that's what they did, and that's what set them up for said position to be in said position so that they could do what they do.
Okay, guys, I'm sorry, I hate to do this. I know we have so much more to talk about, but I'm afraid we have reached the end of our time. So if you could just take a minute to sort of summarize your points, and unfortunately we're going to have to leave it here for today.
Absolutely. No, not a problem, and I apologize for being so drawn out. I just want to say that it's hard for me to summarize a lot of this stuff very quickly because it's taken me, you know, most of my life for several years worth of experience to amass a lot of the knowledge that I have through experience, so it's hard to condense it very quickly, and I thank you all for bearing with me and listening to me. And
In closing, I will just add that I would recommend that everybody look for this document online and read it. It is a document that is titled Military Transformation, A Strategic Approach. It is by Arthur K. Sabrowski, Director of Office of Force Transformation. He is one of the architects of the fraudulent war on terror, one of the main people for the New World Order to, he's basically the father of net-centric warfare, you know, which is the war against the people using all these computerized systems, which is now future combat systems. And this video that I mentioned last time that I did a show here regarding PTEC, is real quick, the link is Vimeo, vimeo.com/577-0472. It's a very educational video. It shows the New World Order admitting their operations. Look at how many IBM is running commercials constantly for the smart grid on TV. That is not something that is good. It is for total enslavement. It is for forced. It is another implementation of eugenics. It is fraudulent. Learn about it. Expose it. Let them know they're liars. Let your power companies, if you know anybody that works at a power company, let them know that the smart grid is complete BS, and find the documentation that shows on how it's going to make things worse and make things more insecure and set everything up to where it can be knocked offline easier, and they can just exploit that. They can charge you double or triple the amount of money of your electric bill, and there's nothing you can do about it. That was actually an article. That's all I have to say. Thanks for having us on, and keep exposing these criminals because they hate the truth, and that's why they're trying to shut it down and let them know that we're not afraid. We don't care what they try to do to intimidate the public. they cannot win because criminals do not, they never prevail in the end. It's that simple.
That's well said. Their weapon is lies, and our weapon is the truth, and our weapon is much stronger than theirs could ever be. So thank you once again, Josh and Mark, for coming on and helping me to help to expose this and piercing the darkness once again. And once again, I'd like to encourage my listeners to begin delving into this subject at the Prison Planet Forum, where you can follow their work as Anti-Illuminati and Lord Syndicate. All right, guys, thank you very much for joining me, and please keep me updated with your research as it comes along.
Absolutely. Thank you,
James. Yeah, thank you, James. It's been our pleasure. Thank you very much, and everyone out there, keep up the fight. We thank you for listening. Thanks for the pleasure. Good night.